It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to 2023 and this year's first episode of Taking Care of Business with me, David Hollywood. Ronan will be back in situ for next week, although we have conspired so that you'll be hearing from him later on. Sales, sales, sales. It's boom time for Midlands retailers. It's never been needed more. We've enlisted the help of those with their ear to the ground when it comes to taking care of business. Sorry, I had to do that. Instead of three wise men, we have three wise people of various chambers of commerce. From Tullamore District, Anthony Hanafy, CEO of Leash Chamber, and Caroline Hoffman. From CEO of Leash Chamber, Caroline Hoffman, and John Gagan from Mullingar Chamber. He is, of course, the president there. Later in the show, we'll be looking at a big move for a Midlands craft beer canning company, and we'll be talking about hot tubs and boats. Right now, though, we're going to hear from the president of Tullamore and District Chamber of Commerce about what the big issues are for businesses heading out of the crucial sales period soon and into the unknown of 2023. Anthony Hanafy talks us through the topics of concern for Midlands businesses.
I think there's three real things, you know, the whole energy side of things, people trying to keep their doors open, and, you know, the ESB pills coming in and being absolutely massive. I suppose one thing is the scheme the minister announced in the last budget there, the BWES scheme, which is very positive. You know, if your bills are more than 50% up on last year, you can claim back a credit to a maximum of 10,000 per month. So that's a hugely positive thing. It'll go some way. It won't go all the way, but it'll go some way to helping people out.
I was going to ask about that specifically, actually, Anthony. Since you brought it up, let's just dwell on it for a second. How effective do you think that scheme has been in keeping businesses' shutters open?
I think it's huge. It's been huge. You know, we've heard different horror stories of bills being up by 200-300%, which, you know, in this day and age, you know, it's very hard to actually keep any door open without when you get a bill like that. So it goes somewhat. It doesn't go all the way, of course, and, you know, the country has to balance its books as well. But I think it's gone a huge way to helping some businesses from keeping the doors closed.
Okay, and then you were making a couple of other points regarding what we could look forward to in the first quarter. What would be important for retailers and businesses?
I suppose the other big issue at the moment is the cost of living crisis out there, and that's what we all have to be mindful of. And it is driving businesses to actually, you know, to offer more bargains and more incentives to come in. And I think most of our members have taken that on board. And basically, in Tullamore, you can see there's great value to be had in different deals now in January. The other thing, I suppose, the other issue has been for the last, basically, I suppose, the last 18 months is staff levels, trying to get staff in. And, you know, that does ease over the holiday period with students that you can avail of. But then they go back to college. So the other issues for the next while is going to be actually staffing levels for our businesses.
That is an interesting one, isn't it? I know it's somewhat cyclical that these things do go in cycles, but certainly at the moment, and it's gone on for more than a moment, the availability of a workforce is a big question mark for the development of business. It really kind of puts a stopper on building up business plans and that type of thing if you can't be sure you can source the workforce.
Exactly. We in the Chamber ran an Offaly jobs fair there last year, and it was hugely successful. The amount of messages we got back after, you know, people that were working in Dublin that basically obtained jobs in the Tullamore and off the areas was huge. The other thing, I suppose, Tullamore has to offer, we do have a lot of houses currently being built that can attract people into our town. So compared to other towns, that's a huge advantage for us. But it is something that's basically not going away. I was just talking to, at the time of the jobs fair, I was talking to one of our county councillors, and he remembers about 12 years ago, they're organising some sort of jobs fair as well, but it was more that there was no jobs available, and trying to get businesses in. This time it was the opposite. We had loads of jobs available. Now, thankfully, we had an awful lot, a large amount of people that were commuting that were able to attend that day that did get jobs in the area after.
And in that instance, then, knowing that that was a success on that occasion, is it something that the Chamber might look at again going forward, or the business community generally?
Yes, we're meeting in the next few weeks on it again to organise the 2023 version. So we're hoping to have it a little bit earlier this year. We're kind of hamstrung last summer in that, you know, the pandemic was still going on up to April, and you couldn't be organising anything. So we organised it in the first week in July, which didn't suit everyone with holidays, and it didn't suit all the business members either. So this year we're hoping to hold it maybe in April or May, but we'll be definitely holding something now in the next few months.
That was President of Tullamore District Chamber of Commerce, Anthony Hanafy. So keep in mind Anthony's points on the issues of 2023. I think he did very well to kind of elucidate on them and to give us an idea of what's coming down the tracks. On Taking Care of Business right now is Caroline Hoffman, CEO of Laois Chamber of Commerce. Caroline, thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Good evening, David.
Anecdotally, how were sales for retailers in Laois through Christmas and now, importantly, of course, as we head past Stephen's Day into the new year and the January sales?
So, Laois Chamber, we recently launched our survey for retailers and hospitality businesses in Laois to get a response on how they fared during December compared to previous years, what challenges they're facing, what supports they'd like to see in the new year. But in particular, people were saying that sales were very strong for December and probably the strongest they've had in a number of years. So overall, it was very positive. People were out spending. They were making up for lost time during the pandemic with Christmas parties, for example. People were out and about. But the concern is coming into January now. People don't necessarily have that spend. They're dipping into savings. The cost of energy, everything's rising. Even the cost of the Christmas dinner went up. And margins are also getting tighter for businesses as well. In terms of gift card sales, I was linking in with a couple of my Chamber Ireland colleagues, and they were saying the gift card and voucher sales are, you know, a bumper year really for them. And I know MeToYou gift cards are up 30% compared to this time in 2021. So it's very positive to see.
It's interesting, isn't it? As you say, there's a sense that there's a tougher time coming down the tracks. So when we think of that context, how important is it to have the bumper sales period that it looks like people have really thrown themselves into Christmas and they're probably out there looking for value when they're going through the January sales? A good run through that period of the year, the late last year and the start of this year, could sustain a company through what could be fallow periods down the line.
It could be, but this is where the government needs to come in as well. We had excellent government support throughout the pandemic. Businesses have shown their resilience, their adaptability, their innovation and dealing with challenges, you know, that were really unprecedented. So the government needs to step in and look at initiatives such as the temporary business energy support scheme, which Anthony mentioned earlier. And this needs to be extended beyond the end of February, particularly when excise reductions are going to lapse at the end of February as well. There's a lot of uncertainty. Businesses need certainty. Consumers need certainty to ensure they spend. One positive that emerged from the COVID-19 pandemic was that people realised shopping local is so important. Supporting your local communities by spending locally is crucial. And a lot of people also invested, a lot of businesses invested in an online presence, particularly through the local enterprise office and trading online vouchers, for example.
Then, Caroline, let's have a look at the year to come. I think you've mentioned some of the issues giving you concern as you do cast your mind forward. Talk us through those issues again. What are the topics that are going to be at the forefront of people's minds when they're planning for their 2023 from a retail and a business perspective?
Energy costs, it's a huge thing. The temporary business energy support scheme, I'll mention it again, at the end of December, 7,000 businesses nationally availed of it. There's still time. Register, check your eligibility and see if you can utilise it, because it's an invaluable support to have. Raw materials are going up. Staff shortages. We have our jobs fair coming up on the 20th of February, and it's the third year we're running it. And this is a very similar challenge to what we had around this time last year with staff shortages, and it's a huge issue and very concerning. Now, the other thing, there's training out there. The LOETBs, the local enterprise offices, they have so much training available. Upskilling and investing in their staff is really good for staff retention, and there's also the high rate of inflation. But there are indicators that this will slow down coming into the coming months. But it's a concerning time, and businesses do need certainty.
The question of the workforce, I think, is an interesting one because it's a departure from what has typically or predominantly been the issue in the past. And in this instance, people can't get the staff. Recruiting is the big challenge. Talk to us about your jobs fair that's coming up. How have you found it in terms of being a success over the last couple of years? Obviously, it's not solved the problem, which is a national or a global issue, but from the perspective of your own remit, your own catchment area of Laois generally, what does the jobs fair do for you guys?
So in previous years, we've said to people it's a way of looking at a job closer to home, reducing your commute. In the first year, 2,500 job seekers attended. Last year, we had 1,500 people. And this year, our tagline is Unleash Your Full Potential. So whether it's upskilling, reskilling, finding a new career, there's something for everybody. We have 30 companies registered so far. Last year, we had 40 exhibitors, hundreds of roles. There's so much on offer. And the feedback from exhibitors was so, so positive as well as job seekers, because they didn't know what was on their doorstep, the high calibre jobs. And, you know, commuting and remote working is kind of, you know, taking a back seat now as people slowly return to the office. Do you really want to be stuck in a car on the motorway to Dublin when you can have a high quality job in Laois? You know, it's no-brainer. So we're hoping to showcase that at the Jobs Fair and show what fantastic companies and opportunities we have available right on our doorstep.
Unleashing your full potential. I like that, actually. It's a good carrot with which to draw people. You mentioned remote working briefly there. Where are we with that from your perspective? Because I think we all thought the world was going to change on a permanent basis after the pandemic. Everybody had gotten somewhat used to working in slippers and dressing gowns. But in this instance now, we see there's far more, it's far more likely to be represented in a hybrid model. But also, it seems that more and more people are going to the office, as it were. And as you say, if remote working isn't, quote unquote, the future, then working locally could be the solution for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Look, remote working is here to stay in certain sectors, whereas other businesses, they need their staff to physically be present in the office. And you see that with the traffic going to Dublin now. It's nearly at pre-pandemic levels at this stage. So look and see what's available on your doorstep rather than having to do that commute, because there's so much on offer in Laois. I used to do it. I used to be on the road at 4 or 5 in the morning, and it's just not sustainable. Now, the remote working hubs also have a part to play if you are working remotely, because it gives you the best of both worlds. You have high-quality facilities, high-speed broadband. You have your water cooler chats with colleagues, which is really important for personal development as well. But I think there are delays with the remote working legislation, from what I've heard. That's being delayed until the summer. So if you want to request remote working, you have to be in your job for a certain number of months or weeks. And if your employer says no, they'll have to present a strong business case as to why they're saying no to it. But it'll be very interesting in the coming months. It'll be difficult to return, you know, fully in the office 5 days when you're only doing 1 or 2 days a week or fully remote even. So that'll be very challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been really good with your time this evening, and I've just got one kind of final question for you. You mentioned personal development, and I suppose I wanted to know from a personal perspective, as CEO of Laois Chamber, over the last year or so, it's just been a very unique time for someone in your position. How have you found existing in that role, the challenges and, I suppose, the rewards that you get out of it?
Look, I've really enjoyed it. We have a fantastic president, a brilliant board. We've recently merged with Laois Tourism as well to form Laois Chamber Alliance. So we're a large organisation now. So our motto is, you know, unleashing Laois's potential in terms of the ideal location to live, work, visit and do business. And we have a number of subcommittees now as well, including Invest in Laois. So our members are fantastic. You know, we have a great network, and it's a brilliant role to be in, but it's certainly very different to where it was when I started, where we were doing Zoom networking meetings. Now it's great to actually be able to be out and about meeting people and visiting sites and different offices. Obviously, there's so many challenges, but I want to be there for our members in terms of lobbying, finding out what supports are there, if there's anything they're unsure about, if they want to see what grants they can avail of, get in touch. We have an open door policy, and we're here to help.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got no shortage of things on your plate, but you are enjoying the challenge. Caroline, thanks for taking the time this evening.
Thank you very much, David.
You're very welcome back to Taking Care of Business with David Hollywood on this particular evening. Ronan couldn't leave the show in all reality, so we'll be hearing from him and a big story coming from the craft beer industry shortly. Before that, we've got what from top to toe looks like a good news story so far, at least, and that's the Mullingar Gift Voucher Project. As promised, John Gagan, President of Mullingar Chamber of Commerce, is on hand to give us the lowdown. John, thanks for joining us. Tell us what the project is, first and foremost.
David, no bother. Thanks for having me on. The Mullingar Chamber Voucher Scheme was set up about 12 years ago in 2010, 2011, in the middle of the last recession. And the idea behind it is that Mullingar vouchers would be available to businesses to buy, or people to buy as gifts for other people, and they would be redeemable in the town, in a business in the town. And it would keep the money inside the town throughout the Christmas period, was the initial plan around it. And in the first couple of years, it was generating €50,000, €60,000 of voucher sales. And that's grown over the last 10 years to where a couple of years ago we were doing €200,000. And this year we're closer to €400,000.
Well, that sounds incredibly promising then. Have you been able to... OK, first and foremost, let's have a look at the comparison compared to last year. Where do you think this sort of increased hunger is coming from, and how does it compare to last year?
A lot of it is COVID-19. A lot of it is to 2 years ago. You know, we were still turning 200,000, let's say, 2 years ago. But in COVID, there was a major drive coming out of lockdown to shop locally and to support local businesses. And we saw that at the end of, let's say, 2020, where we had a lot of companies who bought vouchers then to gift to their staff. And it's highly tax efficient because there was a €500 tax free gift to the company could give to a person. So it's extremely tax efficient for companies and for the recipient. And we thought COVID was a big driver. And also in the last couple of years, we've rebranded the thing from being the Mullingar Chamber voucher to the Mullingar voucher. So it's not really driven around the chamber. It's more driven around the town itself.
Are you telling me, John, that the word chamber just isn't quite sexy enough?
Yeah, it's got connotations. We thought that Mullingar as a town has got a wider appeal, you know, and we see that then, you know, and we market it then throughout, let's say, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, and so on. And the beauty is it keeps the money in the town. You know, so it's redeemable in any business that presents a voucher to us. We will redeem it for them. And we've over 130 companies now will accept them in the town.
It's a fascinating project for a number of reasons. One I just wanted to check in on you with was, considering its progress, let's call it, is there a ceiling, do you think, where, okay, the town is a certain size, it has a certain footfall over the period of time that these vouchers get used, therefore we can only expect X amount of growth with this?
There is and there isn't. When I looked at this about 2 years ago, I looked at the most successful one in the country is above in Dundalk towns, and Dundalk Chamber runs that one, and it turns €1 million a year. And I set our target to get to €1 million over 5 years, and we're halfway there now, 2 years in. So I think we can get this up to about £1 million in the next 2-3 years, and if we do, that'll be a big achievement, I think.
Yeah, unquestionably it would be, and credit to the people in Dundalk Chamber for getting theirs to that point. One other question I had about this is, you know, can you track the usage of these vouchers? By that, I mean, does the chamber or those who take in the vouchers or give out the vouchers get more business insights based on where they go, or it's kind of untrackable and unknowable?
Yeah, no, it is trackable. So basically, at the end of January, we'd have 90% of the money would be redeemed. So we would see on the list, let's say, from top to bottom, which retailers redeemed the money, you know, which one came out number one, number 50, you know. And you'd be surprised, like, and the trend over the years has been people tend to use these vouchers largely for grocery shopping and then for gifts, you know. So a lot of it is gifts in individual retailers in the town, but a chunk of it is with some of the big retailers in the grocery shop, given Christmas time is so expensive for people.
Yeah, that rings true. I know many people who, when they get their vouchers from work, be it through whatever job or occupation they have, it's a great one to knock off the weekly shop at Christmas or whatever it is. So, based on what you're picking up in that information, you are learning to a certain degree how they're being used. the scheme is successful. Are there any clear learnings from the process that you've been involved with it so far that you can carry forward?
I think it's an enormous success for Lakes and Mullingar. And if we can get it up to €1 million in 3 years' time, we reckon that's worth about €2 or 3 million to the economy, because the money multiplier effect runs 12 months of the year. And we think that'd be an amazing achievement. And it'll support the streets. A lot of retailers redeem the voucher, so the money gets spent in their shop, over the course of the year. So in that way, it's very good. I think every town in the country that has more than 10,000 population should have a voucher scheme for the town, particularly now given the onset of digital retail and e-commerce.
That's an interesting one as well. Okay, so let's say we've got our floor there of maybe that population mark. Shopping local is and has been a huge issue for businesses in towns. We heard earlier this evening that people are shopping local more due to rising costs. Obviously, it costs more money to get into the city centres on the coasts of the country. Do you find that that's the case? And presumably then that has helped the voucher scheme along in this big step of growth and ultimately to your intended target of 1 million.
I think it has. I think you can see in regional towns this Christmas particularly, the people are a lot more reluctant to make that journey into Dublin. The ad hoc journey is 80 kilometres each way. You've got to park your car and pay tolls. Diesel prices are up 40-50%. So for a lot of families, that's 60, 70, 80 quid they don't need to spend. And they can stay in Mullingar, shop in Mullingar, or tip down to Athlone or Tullamore if they decide to spread the wings a bit,
Certainly wouldn't be arguing against it from this standpoint. Final question then, John. We've been asking some of your chamber colleagues in other districts what they see being the big issues for businesses and retailers specifically heading into the new year, as that is where we find ourselves now. For your money, from your perspective, what are the things giving you sleepless nights, and what are the things that you've got that give you hope?
I suppose, I personally am not involved in retail in my business or as such, but I would come across a lot of retailers in my role in the chamber. And I mean, the big issue is footfall, turnover on streets, and are the towns actually supporting their shops, sufficiently? And I think Mullingar is very lucky. It's got a long history of a very strong street, and it's got nearly 100% occupancy of all shops. We're very fortunate here that way. A lot of other towns are not as lucky. If you look at Longford and Roscommon, they've got issues given their distance from Dublin and, to settlement patterns there. But I mean, what are they keeping us awake at night? It's the town centre. It's to keep people shopping, keep it local and keep people coming in and spending a few pounds in Mullingar.
John Gagan, President of Mullingar Chamber of Commerce. You've been good with your time once again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for the call. Take care.
Yeah, that was John Gagan from Mullingar Chamber of Commerce. A really interesting perspective about the gift voucher project that they've been running over the course of the years and the great growth that it's shown in recent times. Are you a local business that thrives on people shopping local? If so, get in touch with us on 083 30 10 103, text or WhatsApp. And we may be able to give you a shout back this evening if you're prompt in your correspondence. Midlands Business has this week announced a merger with Norwegian craft can industry leading company Hydron. Based in Mullingar, Bevcraft was named in the Financial Times fastest growing businesses of 2022, one of only a handful of Irish companies that got into that list. They have operations in the UK, Netherlands and now, of course, Norway. The Westmeath outfit believe the deal will allow for further growth across Europe. They also believe the merger will provide incentive to invest further in their Midlands base too. This is Ronan's aforementioned cameo on his week off from taking care of business. Here he chats to finance director with Bevcraft, Kieran Gorman, who talks us through the merger and what it means.
I suppose we've spent most of the year getting ready to complete this transaction. We know Hydron Tapperi, the business in Norway, for at least the last 5-6 years. And, we've worked together, collaborated on small projects over the years. We would have run into each other at various trade shows and events. But in the past 12 months, it's really become clear that working together could really help both businesses drive on in both Mullingar in Ireland and in Sandefjord in Norway, which is where they're based. So in the last week, or just before Christmas, I should say, we finally executed all the necessary paperwork and the deal concluded. So 23rd of December, I think, is the date and everything. We left it down to the wire to get this one across the line for the year. But, you know, we're delighted to merge with Hydrant Tapperee. The business will still be, I suppose, run largely from Mullingar here, and we continue to employ a large number of people here and hope to continue to grow that headcount. But it does bring a Norwegian element into the business, where we'll have two people, Eirik Solveig and Orion Solveig from Sandefjord, Norway, joining our board and hopefully contributing to the overall growth of the business. I suppose in our industry, certainly, it's important to continue to scale and grow so that we can professionalise what we do and reach more customers and hopefully provide better services to them.
Both companies were founded in 2016, and I'll hazard a guess it's probably not an overly populated market given the specialist nature of what you do. So what does the merger bring? So you mentioned how it's going to be still headed from Mullingar. What does getting the Norwegian company on board, what would it actually bring, and how will it enhance the Bevcraft brand?
Well, it's all about, I suppose, identifying the best way, most efficient way to deliver the goods and services that we handle. And it might sound simplistic to say that Ireland and Norway, while we share a lot in common, there's some significant differences. But that is what contributes to, you know, I suppose, new knowledge. They're a much more sparsely populated country. We're maybe 10 times denser population in Ireland than in Norway, which physically means that for a mobile canning business, they've had to figure out ways to service customers that aren't in just 1 or 2 hours from Mullingar, but are 7, 8, 9 hours from their base in Sandefjord. So they've tried different equipment over the years, they've tried different work practices, they've tried different methodologies, and that's, you know, reaped benefits in terms of their efficiency and their approach to work. And we hope to apply some of those lessons into the rest of the Bevcraft Group. And on the other side of it, I suppose, they're familiar with the Nordic market. At the moment, Bevcraft exports into Finland and Sweden, Iceland, Denmark and Norway in our own right. But they have a much closer relationship with these markets, and they'll be able to better service those customers. So I suppose it's win-win on both counts there.
For any business that is expanding onto continental Europe as well, maybe wanting that, maybe some people probably lose sight of is, you know, if you were exporting to the south of Italy, but also then to Scandinavia, you're talking huge difference in climate. Does that affect the business you do, and therefore will the Norwegians bring a new level of experience and technical ability into the company?
Absolutely. There's at least two fronts that they've pulled ahead, I suppose, over the years on. And one is that because of the geography and the winter conditions of travelling around Norway, they've been quick to develop a static canning offering in Sandefjord, which means instead of going to a client site, the client sends liquids or beverages to them for packaging in a controlled environment that's less prone to logistics issues. And that's something we're doing in Mullingar at the moment, but they're a good few steps ahead of us in experimenting and learning with that. So we'll be able to bring that knowledge back to Ireland to expand our offering here. And I suppose the second point is that because they're a relatively remote country, they have early on invested in 3D printing in terms of parts and spares, and they've tried other pieces of equipment that we haven't tried. So we have an element of 3D printing here in Mullingar, but we'll be able to learn from their experience with it in terms of practical issues like getting machines up and running quickly after a breakdown.
And of course, even with facilities close, like right on your doorstep, like the IMR building there, where it's, you know, it's pioneering 3D printing and even additive printing as well, there's potentially great collaborations that could come and drive this as well. But I suppose it's really great to hear an announcement like this coming at the end of a year where, you know, people thought we were getting away from the pandemic and all the maybe the additional costs and the challenges that presented the business, to then face into the invasion in Ukraine, which had a huge effect on business across Europe, then rising energy costs as well. From your own perspective, how has the year been for Bevcraft, and how have you managed rising costs? Because I'm sure it's affecting ye.
It's been a challenging year compared to prior years. We had a great run of it, to put it that way, in the first 5-6 years of business, where growth was extremely robust. This year, growth slowed down quite a lot. We still grew the business overall, but maybe not at the levels that we would have historically enjoyed. And a big part of that is the cost of living pressure on consumers, which feeds through to our target market, which are the beverage producers. We would have seen significant price hikes 12 months ago, and there's further hikes from in material costs in place from January, this coming January. And of course, energy has been a huge battleground. I know maybe about two-thirds of our business at the moment is international. A big chunk of that is in the UK. And there's been over 100 breweries have gone out of business in the past 6 months in the UK, out of a population of about 2,000 breweries, largely because of energy cost challenges. And there's a similar experience in every market. Thankfully, in Ireland, there hasn't been as many that have fallen into that position, but there have been a few, including here in the Midlands, and that's been really sad and tough to see. That is driven by cost challenges, and consumers maybe just being a little bit more careful with their limited resources.
Yeah, and of course, I think that is reflective of a lot of sectors too. I think as the likes of the COVID supports and various incentives begin to be waned out, even in hospitality, there's talks of, the VAT rate is due to go back to 13.5%. So clearly there are challenges coming. So it is a great time to get these announcements for Mullingar. The two founders of the company, they're actually going to join the board of directors of Bevcraft. That's the way the structure it's going to be going forward.
Absolutely, yes. So I suppose their business will be comparable in size to our Irish business. So it'll add about maybe a quarter to the overall picture. And we're delighted to invite the two of them to join our board and to assist in decision-making at an executive level. I suppose the whole point here of it being a merger as opposed to some form of other transaction is that these guys bring an awful lot to the table. They have good ideas in terms of how to develop the overall business, and they have a technical background as well, both would have an engineering specialism behind them, and we hope that will add to the overall picture in terms of how we grow Bevcraft Group. And there's several other markets in Europe we'd love to service. We do service to a degree, but how we crack that nut, it needs more heads than just Darren and myself, I suppose, to make the best decisions possible.
Well, I think when you announce a merger like this, I mean, that's one thing that I know that, any investors or anyone looking to put money into a company would certainly look for is, are the team in place, and are the team also aware of maybe where there potentially are gaps in terms of skills or knowledge base? So to see you doing that is massive. You mentioned other potential markets around Europe. Is there any limits of where you're looking at? Like, is this a service you can see rolled out maybe towards Asia or over towards the States, or where will things go for Bevcraft in the next couple of years? I'm sure you're not going to sit in your laurels anyway.
Well, I suppose we've got plenty of ideas, but one thing we did back in March this year is we acquired Denver Can's mobile business in the UK, which was our first M&A transaction, and that's been a really interesting learning experience over the last 9-10 months in terms of how to integrate another operation, other teams, work practices and so on, and it's gone very well. But it's been extremely time-intensive from a management perspective. And I know my co-director, our CEO, Darren Fenton, has put in huge amount of time in the UK this year. So I suppose when we look at new geographies, we have to be careful not to bite off more than we can chew in terms of providing a good experience for everyone concerned. So, look, there's no market that we're not interested in, but we have to be careful about how quickly we do it. We do have active discussions with two other businesses at the moment. I don't know if they'll conclude which had a result at this stage, but we certainly will look, continue to look abroad. There is a mobile canning industry in most countries in the world at this stage, and it is highly specialised. One thing it definitely benefits from is scale and collaboration. So continue to grow the business in this fashion makes a lot of sense.
That was Kieran Gorman from Bevcraft speaking with Ronan Berry. We couldn't really give him the night off, could we? Now, we all know Loch Ree for its beautiful surrounds. What better way to take it all in than in a hot tub with a companion, maybe? Better still, let's put that hot tub on a boat. Shane McCormick is the man behind the hot tub boat. The Westmeath business got a huge exposure upon its launch late last year. Shane and I talked about how he ended up the proprietor of one of the more novel and intriguing enterprises I've ever come across. First, Shane talks us through what you can look forward to if you book a night on the hot tub boat.
The hot tub boat, I suppose, it's unique, it's different. We've three locations that we pick up from: Cousin Point, Hudson Bay, and at Lone Town. The most popular cruise is the sunset cruise. So we pick up 1 hour before sunset. We have our cruise designed that customers will get the best views of the actual sun going down as well. This trip probably lasts approximately 90 minutes. So depending on the particular evening, they might also get a beautiful afterglow, which the boat was named after. We really set the mood with the lights around the hot tub, etc.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it has the potential to be a bit extra special in terms of somebody's evening. Just to jump around the concept of this getting started, when did it get started? How did it get started? Where does one end up coming up with an idea like this? I know that being on the water is something that you're very familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm on the river since, I was very young, just washing boats with a hire boat company called Waveland Cruisers. And then I joined Lochree Oranlai Lifeboat Station then in 2012, one of the first crew members on it. And through them, we started doing different courses and that kind of thing. And at the end of, when you're actually passed out as a crew member, it ended up that I actually had all the qualifications to send away to the ISA and actually get a commercial skipper license from that. Again, I was always on the river with hire boats, all that kind of stuff, and I kept pushing forward, kept saving, and eventually I said, I'll go out on my own. I had to make up my own mind then what I was actually going to do. Obviously, I'm a one-man band as such, and this idea came to me. I was always going to boat shows, and they all have, all the super yachts have hot tubs and everything on them. I just said, geez, could this be made into a business itself? And started doing research about it. Obviously, stability with different vessels, all that kind of stuff came into it. And kind of giving myself a degree or an education on it. And I just went and bought a vessel then, especially to do it. Oh, here I am.
Yeah, I say to one degree your head must be spinning, but it must have been exciting. As you say, you were conducting the research, you were building up your knowledge about what it is you might have been about to take on board. And considering at this stage, it seems like the business has made great strides in its early stages. That must be a really rewarding thing to have kind of put the groundwork in yourself and be at this point today.
Yeah, like to be fair, I was very, very lucky. I suppose it's such a novel idea that a lot of the media got on board with it straight away. I was on most of the major newspapers, radio stations. I was on the Late Late Show there back in November, I was quite lucky that way. That I suppose with the business starting off, I didn't have to spend too much on advertisement, which I was very, very lucky.
Yeah, you got the name out there, which in this instance, I imagine, is a huge
aspect.
Yeah,
and obviously the name, the hot tub boat, kind of, it gives it away. It's a simple idea, but it also turns heads as well to say, well, what's this about?
Oh, it's absolutely a rock and roll name. Like it's what every business person dreams of being able to do with the name of their business, is to tell people what's going on with it in a way that...
Absolutely.
In a way
all
that's
you have
appealing.
To do is put it up, put it into Google, and all of a sudden I'm there. I'm the first one up when you put it in. So it's brilliant. It is.
Now, considering it's early days, have you an idea of the type of customer that you're honing in on, or has it that been a kind of a learning experience finding out the makeup of the typical person who's attracted to the hot tub boat?
Yeah, to be totally honest, it surprised me. I thought it was going to be kind of more between 20 and 30 kind of clientele, between 20 and 30 years of age. But it's actually between 30 and 65 years of age, which totally surprised me. It's a group of girls getting together, haven't seen each other in ages, and it's just a great way. It's a private boat tour, so it's only them that's on the boat. They're in the hot tub, they're connected to a speaker, and they're just taking in the views and talking. Then the other clientele will be couples. It's very big with couples, and I suppose there's a lot of couples getting in contact then, to ask the big question on us as well. So it totally surprised us when we started the business.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're hoping now that very much love lasts forever from a business perspective. So, as I said, relatively early days. Have you an idea of what the potential is for the business? And in terms of decision-making, have you cooked up any madcap changes to it? Or, say, for the next 6 or 12 months, it's continuing as you've gone to just basically keep on learning as you go? Because, as I imagine, as we've referred to back regarding the makeup of the customer, there's still lots to learn as you go through this journey.
Yeah, so For myself going forward, I'm going to keep it the same as 2022, moving on to 2023. I'm just going to improve the operational side of for myself. Again, I am a one-man band, so I'm trying to keep everything that it's easy on the operational side for myself and try to make it that little bit cheaper, but not taken away from the experience from the customer itself. How am I doing? I've had one customer back four times, so... Wow. That says that I'm doing something right, and I'm just trying to build on that. Obviously, I've had more customers back numerous times as well, but that's been the most. But when you see a repeat customer coming back to a business that's just opened up a couple of months, it gives you, you know, a bit of life to say that it is going to work and that you're actually doing something right and that you can move forward with it.
So I'm curious then, Shane, to ask, how did you figure out pricing points and like what's value for money? Obviously, you get good feedback quite literally when you see people coming back shortly after starting the business. That probably gave you great encouragement that you had landed on value for money. How was it going through the experience of figuring that out?
Yeah, so I originally went in low with my prices and I made them prices back in 2020. And then obviously the cost of living went mad. Fuel prices, which would be my main cost, went up. I kept 2022 at the same price. I didn't increase them. For 2023, there is an increase. So the premium cruise has only gone up €30, you could say, from last year. So that, if you've got six people on the boat, it works out €5 each. I'm trying to keep them as low as I can and try and give that value to the customer moving forward.
Yeah, that's obviously a complicated thing to try figure out, especially when you're a nascent business like yourself. I'm curious as well, the pandemic has obviously led in large part to the bottleneck of supply, which goes on to inform this cost of living crisis along with the war in Ukraine. But one of the slightly more positive aspects, I think, after the pandemic was you've got what is reportedly a growing a customer base of people looking for experienced-based activities. And yours is ultimately exactly that. Do you think that experienced-based businesses are getting a post-pandemic boost?
I do. I do, but I think they got a big boost during the pandemic. During the pandemic, people were at home. They couldn't go anywhere. There was businesses that were providing this experience and they were working around the customers. Then, I suppose, during the summer, the airports opened up and all of a sudden people started leaving the country instead of staying in Ireland to experience these businesses. The war in Ukraine, obviously, all our hearts bleed for these people, but the hotels in locality started taking in Ukrainians, which obviously brought up the prices more in hotels for local customers coming in and potential customers to the locality. So that is tough on people. I suppose for businesses like myself, we got a chance to get out there, especially during the pandemic, because people were actually searching for them places.
Yeah, that sounds very multifaceted and complicated, ultimately, to kind of get your head around. One thing I wanted to ask you, Shane, before we finish up this evening, is the government seem intent on supporting outdoor tourism, particularly in this region with the Hidden Heartlands and so on. Does that give you confidence looking at the long run for your business, considering, you know, you're slap bang in the middle of it? You seem to fit the brief exactly. And whilst you are there now working away, the tourism industry might grow in a very supportive way around the region.
Yeah, I hope so. I suppose the government are absolutely, yeah, they're putting potential into the outdoor scenery itself. We have an unbelievable country. The River Shannon, 386 kilometres of waterways from north to south, and it goes right down into Limerick, right out onto the sea. So there's huge potential there for the government even to work on even more. But it definitely brings the Hidden Heartlands into the main advertisement of the country for tourism.
Yeah, well, certainly there's a nice hidden gem in the Midlands as things stand, and that is the hot tub boat. It's named after Glow, and of course you can get Shane McCormack's company online and book yourself a trip on that boat on to Loch Ree from Cousin Point, Hudson Bay, or indeed Athlone. Shane, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us this evening and to wish you the very best going forward into the new year.
Brilliant, David. Thanks a million for having me, and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Yeah, top man Shane McCormack there. If you are looking them up online, the hot tub boat, those four words, put it into Instagram, Facebook, Twitter or YouTube. I imagine he's going to be swamped and beyond when it comes to the Valentine's Day bookings. So maybe jump in quickly if you do want to get sorted there. That's it from this particular evening's episode of Taking Care of Business. I will thank my contributors, of course. We've just heard from Shane McCormack, Anthony Hanafy, Caroline Hoffman and John Gagan. They were from Tullamore District Chamber of Commerce, CEO of Laois Chamber and the President of the Mullingar Chamber. Of course, Ronan was chatting with Bev Crafts, Kieran Gorman, and next up you can look forward to listening to Joe Cooney with Country Roads.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.